in a world full of straight people. Aren't you glad there's WOW Presents Plus, the number one place in the world to see Drag Race? And so much more. Subscribe to WOW Presents Plus. Still only $4.99. Subscribe today as streamed on TV.
Start your engines and join me in the new mobile game, RuPaul's Drag Race Superstar. May the best superstar win. Available now.
Listeners, some of you may know I was an assistant for many years. I was a personal assistant. I worked for a few celebrities, actually. And, you know, so I know how the sausage is made, and I know where the bodies are buried, and I know where all the good rehabs are. And my assistant career really started with the highlight of it was the person I assisted the longest had a profound and lasting effect on me, has become a dear friend. And she's a great ally to our community. She's our guest today. By the way, Dave is unable to join us because the wind in LA is so insane that his internet is down. So it's also his birthday. Happy birthday, Dave. We love you. We miss you. He is not here, but who is here is a titan, is I think our chosen word of the fitness industry. And I could probably rattle off her bio in my sleep because I had to help write it and update it so many times over the years, but I do have notes. I'm going to cheat. So she pioneered the home exercise boom with a library of her workout videos, which started on vinyl and then exploded into an empire over $500 million in sales. She's been a Today Show correspondent, LA Times columnist, and New York Times bestselling author, a founder's circle member of Billie Jean King's Women's Sports Foundation, Video Hall of Famer, and the remaining list of honors and partnerships is far too long, honestly, but it includes PBS, QVC, the American Diabetes Association, the President's Council on Fitness, the International Council on Active Aging, the American Heart Association, and on and on. She's also got her own line of supplements, an all-in-one workout app, and a highly acclaimed podcast called The Art of Living, where she's interviewed guests like Diana Nyad and Bulletproof Coffee creator Dave Asprey. Kathy Smith is here. Miss Kathy, hello.
Matt Mann. You were a baby when you came, when we first met. I think you were like 24 or something. I mean, or just
not
you
even.
Were you a young'un? I know when I first met you, you were so adorable. And I loved it because you were an actor and are an actor, but you were, you know, starting your acting career. So you would take off to go for auditions, et cetera. And it was fascinating to watch back then your transition and your growth and your evolution and to where you are today. So I love you.
I love you. I mean, yeah, I hope I have over the years expressed my remorse and gratitude for the many times I was a terrible assistant. And the fact that you never gave up on me says so much about you. You know, there was like, after a while, there is a little bit of a kind of a familial codependent thing that can happen in that relationship. Mm-hmm. We certainly mm-hmm. had our version of that, but like anybody else would have fired my ass so quickly early on because I would get these last minute auditions and sort of take my quote unquote lunch break. But you lived in Santa Monica. I'd be driving across town to Hollywood in the middle of the day and disappearing. It was a disaster, but you know, we've come a long way.
Not a disaster, but it was, you would come back. You know, I was always in awe of you, Matt, because you would go out and some days you would have auditions every day, sometimes a couple a day. And then I would say, did you get it? You had a game face. And I thought, how does somebody do this kind of job? How does somebody go out and get rejected and then come back and just, you know, keep going with your day? So when you did get the part, I was elated, but I was very much in awe of how you handled how you stay positive, how you stay the course, even when, you know, it's not going your way or you're not finding the jobs. So that was pretty much, I've learned so much from you, but yeah, I am a bit of not a taskmaster, but codependency is a good word, because I will come down on somebody or in my version of it, which is kind of not coming down, but getting a little passive aggressive and like the tone in your voice, tone of my voice. So we worked through it all. So I'm glad to say that you helped me grow.
Oh, well, that's very kind of you. You helped me grow I still to this day am every time sort of I hit a milestone in my life, there are just so many times that I think back and go, wow, I think I'm probably handling this in a sane and grounded way because of something Kathy taught me, or just in a way that Kathy rubbed off on me. And, you know, the biggest thing I always say, my writing career really started because of you, because, you know, we were sort of a two-person operation. Obviously, you're working with a ton of other companies, but in terms of like the home office, it was often just the two of us. And one thing that was a very regular part of my duties was just like not writing emails for you, but actually sitting at the keyboard, because as Kathy Smith will tell you, sitting is the new smoking. And so Kathy's not one to want to sit in front of the computer and respond to these endless emails. So she would often be like doing a wall sit in behind me or lunges or something while I'm sitting at her daughter's desk. And Kathy used her youngest daughter, Perry's desk, as her home work space. And Kathy would be dictating, you know, responses to emails. And then over time, I'm starting to like get your voice and know and I'm able to do it almost on autopilot. I'm able to like help edit a little bit. And that just kind of grew naturally, where I was able to sort of channel Kathy, write in Kathy's voice in a way that like then it slowly turns into, you know, helping edit your newsletters a little bit, writing some newsletters. And you were the first person that I can remember who said to me, like, you could probably do this as a career. And I was always like, but I'm an actor, you know, that's, I can't turn my back on my precious act. But it really, looking back, I didn't know it at the time, but looking back, it had such a massive effect on me.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And don't you overlook the fact that you also wrote one of my books. So, you know, it went from you went to a book. But, you know, it's interesting. I'm an entrepreneur, and there's something called the entrepreneur's brain. And the way that my brain works is that I have a lot of ideas. And those ideas, and I love it, it's like a flood of ideas coming from all different directions. But sometimes it feels a little chaotic in my brain. And so I'd always like to do a brain dump. I love dumping my thoughts out. And sometimes they were cohesive, sometimes they were random. But what I loved, and this is truly your magic, you could take whatever I dumped, whether I was saying it or else I would just type stream of consciousness. And 4 minutes later, it's this, in my estimation, it was like a masterpiece. You're coming back. It makes sense. So you made me look so much smarter. And then I would say something, she'd go, and then you'd say, but Kathy, your words were all right there. And then I'd go back. I go, oh, I did say that. So
you
it
did.
Is interesting. It is interesting. You were really, you know, instrumental in getting the direction going with my voice and helping to, you know, get it more cohesive.
I mean, there's so much I want to get into. I want to sort of do the classic Kathy Smith story, but I guess we should also start the way we normally start on this show, just talking about pop culture stuff that you're currently loving. Like, is there a show that you're binging right now or something that you're currently obsessed with?
Well, I just finished The Resident last night. Have you looked at The Resident yet? On Netflix?
No. Is it a medical show? Or
a medical show. And it is so hot and it's so good. And they have a character in there. You know, it's ER, it's Grey's Anatomy, but not at all. It's darker. It really shows the medical system and community, the medical system, with all of its need to make money at the same time, mistakes being made, how they hide the mistakes, but, you know, sexy. And there's one character there that I think, you know, I'm a big Succession fan, have been through the years. Yeah. I love Brian Cox. And there's a character there that looks like this next season, he will be the Brian Cox type of character. And, you know, the young hot doctor, what's his name? It's like Conrad, is it Conrad Hawkins or something? I think it's Conrad Hawkins, but he's the young hot doctor that's just the badass, but a rebel. I like that one. But I'll tell you what, I mean, it's a little different than your question, but I am a Sundance junkie.
Of course.
A Sundance is up because I live in Park City, Utah right now. And it's in the end of January. And I've only invited you probably for 20 years now or whatever.
At least, yes.
But that's where in a 7-day period, see about 20, 25 films. And that sort of just gets my juices going. So,
yeah.
And I love documentaries. I don't know, at Sundance, and I don't know if it's out yet, but have you heard of Will and Harper? Have you heard about that documentary?
I don't think so. No, tell me.
Okay. So Will Ferrell and Harper Steele, who was a writer on Saturday Night Live in the early years, Harper, you know, through all those years and everything, he had a family, had children. At the age of 60, decided to transition.
Oh, right. And I do know about this. Yes.
You do know. Okay. So they take a road trip together. So Will Ferrell and Will and Harper decide, because they were close. And when he called, and, you know, Will had to deal with how he felt about that. You know, they had to, you know, deal with how that feels and how Will feels and how Harper feels at this age, how his children feel. But they took a road trip, you know, across country. And it's a documentary about that, and ending up in places like Texas and Arizona, different places where they were very open that
Harper was trans.
You know, it was trans. And so when they'd sit at a restaurant and somebody would come up and say, you know, what would you like, sir? And Will would go, it's ma'am, or Harper would go, it's ma'am. And then, you know, so you saw these blocks that people have, but then you also saw that when you open up the dialogue, that, you know, when you're willing to talk and you're willing to be able to have these discussions, that you break down barriers. And I think that's so important. I have to tell you, even personally, through the years as we age, I found it really interesting with my kids when 4 years ago, when or longer, you know, how you use words, it became very, you know, I became very conscious of how I was using words. And I thought at one point, I thought, you know, guys, I marched in the civil rights movement.
Right.
I'm really for the, you know, whether I use African-American or Black or whatever it might be, it just felt like I was on pins and needles. And then with trans community and, you know, as we go through the he, she, all of this, which is new for certain people, to be able to have dialogue about it, as opposed to shaming somebody for using the wrong word, even though you're trying.
Right.
So I thought that was interesting. It was a really interesting documentary. So I love that one.
That's such a great recommendation. I can't wait to see it. I did hear about that. That's yet another reason I should have come to Sundance, I guess.
Well, you
one of these years, maybe the 25th time you invite me, I'll finally show up. You know, I often ask people about their morning routine. I just love hearing the little nuances and quirks of people's morning routines. And yours has always been formative to, I mean, you introduced me to meditation. You know, I sometimes, if I was at work early enough, which wasn't always the case, but I would catch glimpses of the Kathy morning routine. There was, you know, often kind of a layered ritual. Sometimes it included the Vibraflex. You know, there was a vibration machine in the house that was a big part of your morning routine for a while. But what does it look like right now? Like, you open your eyes, what's the first thing that happens?
After going to the bathroom, it is sun. I mean, again, some of it, I'll tell you what my routine is, and I'll maybe mention whether you're, and tell me if you're not interested, but there's a lot of research about how getting sun within the first 10 minutes of waking up. And when I say getting sun, stepping outside and looking toward the direction of the sun without sunglasses on and getting that hit in your eyes. And what happens is it not only affects your dopamine levels, but it's also, you get a cortisol hit from it. Now, we think cortisol is bad. A lot of people have heard cortisol is bad, but cortisol is what honestly gets you going. And the last thing that the morning sun does is it sets your circadian clock, that's your daily clock, so that it kind of times, it says, okay, this is when I'm waking up. And about, you know, I think it's whatever, you know, depending on your circadian clock, but about 12, 13 hours later, that's when you're starting to get tired. And if you don't set that clock in the morning, you sometimes have a harder time sleeping at night. So anyway, sun's important. Now you can go out, you can take some, you know, deep breaths, just wake up, take your cup of matcha. For me, it's matcha. But then the second thing I start, which is, I go through phases with this, but I'm telling everybody out there, whenever I go back into this phase, it is mind-boggling what it does to my energy level, my focus, and my brain. And that's hydration. I mean, we're all pretty much, with our caffeinated world, we're underhydrated anyway. But getting up and having, and now there, you know, there's been now much more research, because we used to throw out different amounts, but 80 ounces right now, average of about 80 ounces within the first 10 hours of the day. So your kidneys are functioning the way you get your kidneys functioning, and your kidneys are designed to function better in the beginning of the day. So that getting the 80 ounces, and you can break it up, but I get up and I have at least 40 ounces before I leave the house. So my glasses are 10 ounces. And I have, and I, you know, I put my lemon juice, and I have a greens that I mix in one, and I do a collard. So, and I flavor them a little bit with like a tiny bit of, as I said, a little lemon, no sugar, but just a lemon squeeze. So that's the next step. And now I start going, that's along with my matcha, because I'm a matcha junkie. Yep. And then the next thing is a combination of, kind of what you mentioned. It's a version of a mindfulness practice. It can be breath. It can be journaling, you know, one, you know, cause these morning rituals, depending how busy you are, can take up a bunch of time. So you kind of have to, you know, and we all go through phases. I've been doing this now. Wow. I've been doing these kind of things for close to 50 years now. And so, you know, some people just sit with their eyes closed and do certain breath work. I love breath work. And there's something I'm doing right now, which I've just started, which is take 60 seconds. I put it on my watch and see how many breaths that you take in 60 seconds. And I try to get mine around 10. So it's inhale, 2, 3, 4, exhale, 2, 3, 4, through your nose, inhale, 2, 3, 4, and just see and notice when you start to have this relationship with your breath, you'll start noticing when you're stressed out. I mean, obviously when you're exercising, you're breathing harder, but you'll notice throughout the day that you can just tell that you're going to some fight or flight type of thing, because your breathing is really, really rapid. And if you can just go into that one, and if you can just become conscious of it. So now I'm practicing that even on the treadmill. I'll get on and I'll go at a slow rate. So it's just my warm up, but it's like, I'll do a 3.5 or 3.6 in the treadmill. And I'll do about 10 minutes of that where it's like inhale, and I'll try to be able to maintain that 10 count breath. So I'm really into that. And as I said, nasal breathing, nothing through the mouth. And if there's anything, another tip for people, just notice how you breathe through the day. I'm shocked how many people sit around conference tables and they're not even working out hard, but they're just the mouth is dropped open and they're breathing through their mouth. And it just, there's a lot of science behind nasal breathing. But then what do I finish off with? Obviously, I don't know if I told you this. I'm training for the 29029 challenge. Have you heard about this?
No. What
okay.
Is this?
So if you Google 29029, it's called Everesting. It started on the East Coast in Vermont. They do it on 6 mountains. I'm doing it in Whistler. So the thing is, you climb up the mountain and then you take the gondola down, but you have to do that the number of times, depending on which mountain you're on, that equals 29,000 feet or the height of Everest. So you have 36 hours to complete this. So you start, I'm doing it in August. My training has started for that. So part of what I'm doing now is I have a training program for that. But you start at 6 a.m. on Friday and you have till 6 p.m. on Saturday to complete it. Again, 36 hours, 50% of the field doesn't complete it. You hike depending on when you want to sleep, but a lot of people hike through the night. So you're training yourself for, you might say, but why, Kathy?
I'm not saying why, because I know you, but yeah, my listeners might be wondering why.
Well, you know, I've always found that having a goal, I mean, having something, and the goal being, I mean, you hear about goals and whatever, but again, as you get older, it's like, what is something that can really focus your year? Like this whole thing, because this doesn't happen until late August. I'm going to Paris for the Olympics because Kate might be in Paris for the Olympics. That's my daughter. Mm-hmm. And she's a runner. But then I come back and then I go to Whistler. And part of it is you join in this community of people. And as we know, communities, you know, bond us and motivate us and everything else. So, and having something that, to take you to the gym, because after a while going to whatever class you're taking, again, not so much at your age, but as you go, what I see where people start dropping off, they get in their late 40s and then their 50s, and then they get an ache or a pain and they just fall out of the game. And something like this has just recharged me. So I don't know if I'll keep you posted. I don't know if I'm going to be able to finish, but I'm telling you what it's done for my training, my strength, my cardiovascular training. It's been unbelievable. And so anyway, the 29029, I'm doing it in Whistler. And then, so getting back to my list, what do I finish off with? So I went through, I went to breath, I went to exercise. And then, you know, this gets into the spiritual side of my life. And I've always had a strong spiritual side, mm-hmm. as you know, and, you know, we've talked about it many times, but, you know, I lost my parents as a teenager. And so when I moved to Los Angeles in 1975, I was attracted to the Self-Realization Center, which is in Pacific Palisades. And back then it was just a place where you would go, you'd go and meditate. But it was founded by Paramahansa Yogananda, who wrote Autobiography of a Yoga. And through the years, this has been my anchor. And the anchor is coming from the heart. And if you think about, again, if you think about your body being the stream of energy, starting from lower chakras, which are down by your, you know, by your pelvis and, you know, moving up and, you know, the pelvis, all the chakras are great. Pelvis is more about sexual and it's more about power and attaining things. And as you move up, you know, you come more up to the heart and it's about giving and loving. And then the throat chakras, which is all about speaking truth, but speaking kindness up to, you know, third eye and then to the spiritual chakra. And I found that as you have a daily practice through the years, and this is the only thing I don't like to, talk as an elder, but although I am teaching at a place called the Modern Elder Academy, but as an elder, I will tell you the choices you make every single day add up so much that the first decade, you might not notice the second decade. By the time you get in the third, fourth decade of doing this practice. So what I'm saying, when you start to get in your late 50s, your 60s, what separates really kind of healthy aging, healthy mindset and everything, people have developed a practice that they've continued with that allows them to let go, continue to look at. I mean, we're all human beings, but all of the shallowness and, you know, do I look good enough? Is my face? Should I go in for a little plastic surgery? Oh, well, maybe, maybe not. But whatever your choices are, and it's not even a good or bad, we're not even saying either of those choices, whether you want plastic surgery or not, fine, it's your choice. It's like, how much time do you spend angsting about it and then once you have it or don't have it, are you critical of other people that have it? Or are you thinking, what's the next thing I have to do? So basically the whole, where I'm at right now in that spiritual practice, which is profound for me. And I just read, Michael Singer wrote, Untethered Soul. And he's got an Audible book, which describes the first four chapters of the book. So it's not actually the book, which is kind of maybe a tough read, but the Audible that describes, and he's lecturing through the first four chapters. It's really about just becoming, you know, you kind of step up, a step out of yourself, and you are sort of looking down at yourself, and you start to become an observer. And that when that happens, and you get out of judgment, like no judging yourself. I love it.
Huge.
And to me, that's been freedom. That has been freedom. Like the good, bad, the dark, the light, whatever.
Yeah, that resonates with me so much because I've been really into Tara Brach recently.
Yeah,
she wrote Radical Acceptance, and she has a podcast that's some just her talking to listeners. I think some of them are also just audio recordings of her like public talks. And she, you know, and there are meditations obviously too, but a thing that I've really latched onto that she talks about that connects to what you're saying, which is just about belonging. So the pieces of you that belong, that you might like, for me, thinking about like all of the rejection I've experienced over the years that you mentioned as an actor, and trying to come to peace with that piece of that part of me that wants to be liked and wants approval and wants external validation and wants like the powers that be to sort of allow me in. You know, that was something that as I became aware of it when I was younger, I was like, well, that's bad because you can't walk into an audition and whiff of desperation. And that means that your priorities are about, you know, other people as opposed to like you trying to express your art, whatever that is. So then you're getting into a cycle of judging yourself, and it doesn't, it's just sort of another form of sabotage. Instead of self-sabotaging, you're judging the saboteur. And you're just stuck in that cycle. But anyway, the idea that even that part of you belongs was huge for me. And it, not that it like cured it, but it softened its grip on me in a way that, has been huge. But, you mentioned, I mean, there's so many things you mentioned that I want to circle back to. One of them, just talking about your routine in the morning, taking in the sun. As soon as you started saying that, I'm like, Michael is a big Andrew Huberman fan. The Huberman Lab, you know, is this huge podcast, and that's part of his morning routine too. And I think Michael tried doing it like twice or something, but over the years, the amount of times some sort of quote unquote new idea has popped up in the wellness world or fitness, the amount of times that I've been like, oh, well, I've known about that for years because Kathy talks about it. Like the amount of trends that come and go that you've been on to so many years in advance is astonishing. Like you're constantly ahead of your time in that way. And even yoga is an example, and we've talked about over the years a lot. Your first yoga workout came out in what, 1990 or something? Like so much longer, you know, earlier than it became a common form of exercise in the United States anyway. But yeah, let's go back to let's tell a version of the Kathy Smith origin story. You mentioned your parents passing at an early age. I would just love to hear the one. Rocky and running.
No. Run it, I know.
This is the greatest hits.
I'll just put the tape on. No, I try not to put the tape on. I try to come from an original place. I'm going to jump in there. I do want to comment on two things that will maybe come back to one of them. One is you're absolutely right about yoga. And I remember I was with Warner Brothers at the time, and I remember walking in and they said, nobody's going to want to, you know, I was pitching doing a yoga video, and they said, nobody's going to want to do yoga. It's like, that's like a religion. It's too Eastern, whatever. So to your point, yes. I mean, stepping into new things, I have an insatiable curiosity for fitness and learning new things about it. And I want to jump back to something you're going to want to hear about that I'm flying to Boulder next week, because this is unbelievable. Okay. So let me just make sure I just wanted to say that so we don't forget to come back to it.
Okay.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, I think it's important to set the stage of when this was. So I graduated from high school in 1969. I was raised in the military and we moved around the world. So São Paulo, Brazil, Belleville, Illinois, Hawaii, Texas, Mobile, Alabama, believe it or not. And we moved every 2 to 3 years. At the age of 17, my dad died of a heart attack. He was 42. And then a year and a half later, my mom was killed in a plane crash. So by the time I was in, just about turning 20, I'd lost both my parents. And why I said it's important to think about the time period, this was late 60s now, early 70s. So it was the Vietnam War, which my high school guy friends were getting, were in the lottery by that time, but drafting. It was women's rights, bra burning time. It was civil rights. My school, it was Kent State riots. It was Woodstock. It was the British invasion. So you had all of this going on, and now your parents aren't around. So you're kind of going, oh my gosh. And I bring up the military side of it and the moving, because I think it's also, that's an important component. I didn't have a family base. We never, even though I'm from Wisconsin, we would go back there every few years or whatever. If you're in São Paulo, Brazil in the 50s, you're not flying back to Wisconsin for Christmas. So anyway, I felt really alone. And I started to get depressed and I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. And I was very anxious. I was in college at the time. I'd gone over to Hawaii to be with my sister. So and then the story is, I was at the track because my boyfriend at the time, Rocky, who was a football player, would go to run and I would run a lap and then a second lap, resting in between. Because another thing to point out is Title IX had not been passed. So at my high school, there were no girl sports. If you looked at my high school, we had boys football, track, et cetera, nothing for girls. So, and the yearbook reflected all of that. And I became a cheerleader in high school because that was the only thing you could do. But there was no girl sports. So when I went out for this run, it's not that I was an athlete. It was just that I did not want to be alone. And I wanted to be, where Rocky was, et cetera, et cetera. Well, I started linking those laps together. And all of a sudden, the doom and gloom, the cloud that was hanging over me started to lift. And I thought to myself, what is this all about? And I would go out for my runs and I started connecting the dots. There's something with this running. No, we were not talking about endorphins and serotonin and dopamine or any of those things back then. It was just like, I went out for the run. I didn't feel great. 5 miles later, I felt great. And then I could go back to school. I studied, I graduated. So that piqued my interest in fitness. And I actually ran my first marathon in 1975 in Hawaii. Another side note, there were 800 people that ran it, only 11 women. So It was Boston Marathon did not allow women at that time. So Catherine Switzer, who's a friend of mine, that wasn't until mid 70s that they were allowing women to run. And when she went to run the Boston, they tried to pull her out. So again, it was this thing that when people say, did you always know you wanted to be a trainer or whatever? I go, no. There wasn't such a thing at that point.
Yeah.
You could be a PE teacher. So that, and then I got to LA because I was doing some bit parts on Hawaii 5-0 to pay a little bit for college and a really bit parts. And then Tom Tannenbaum, who was president of Universal Television, came over to do a TV show over there called, or a made for TV movie called Aloha Means Goodbye with Sally Struthers. I was on the North Shore of Oahu and I was just an extra, but Tom saw me going through the revolving door and it was kind of like, I was going this way. He was going that way. The revolving door went around. He came back in and he goes, hey, can I, let's sit down or whatever. Anyway, I moved to LA. I moved into Tom Tannenbaum's guest house in Santa Monica on the beach. It was a wild ride. Once again, for all of the things, it was a time where I was running. People were interested in that, but you got to LA. There were a lot of drugs. There were a lot of Quaaludes and Coke and this and that. And so, and of course I like to try it all. It's kind of my personality, but in the course of being on the beach in Santa Monica, this is probably 76, 77, there was a woman that lived next door to Tom. Her name was Gilda Marks, and she had a company called Flexitard. So Gilda asked me, she saw me running. She goes, you want to be my hang tag model? So on a clothes, obviously they have these hang tags. So I modeled for her and she had a studio, the only studio around, which was called Body Design by Gilda. They played music. There were people in the class on one side of me when I was in class with Barbara Streisand. On the other side was Jane Fonda. And we would be doing arm circles. And if anybody's seen the old Jane Fonda videos, or it's just imagine arms out to the side and you're doing circle, 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 and forward, back, forward, back, forward, back. And you did like 1,000 of those. So, but it was in a class format. It had music. And I fell in love with the concept. I fell in love with this concept of, and but there was no aerobic component. And that was really one of the things that also backing up that I think people are surprised always to hear. When I started running, doctors were saying, as they're smoking their cigarettes, that running's not good for you, not good for women, and that you wouldn't be able to get pregnant. You couldn't, you know, your uterus would drop. And so it was really a little bit of being, you know, a hard-headed or badass kind of person. Yeah, rebel to go up against this. I'm going, no, that doesn't seem right. So anyway, that was where I designed my, you know, I designed an aerobic class. And right about that time, there was a doctor in Texas named Ken Cooper, and he actually coined the term aerobics, which means with oxygen, which using big muscles, doing big moves, which we know about now. But anyway, that was the beginning of it. And then about 1978, there was a woman in my class, Toni Perfera, and she was an independent record promoter. Now, back in the days when you try to get your songs on the radio, they try to, you know, get the DJs, or they weren't called DJs, but they try to get them to put the songs on, and they give them everything. Again, once again, It was the days of Coke and all the stuff that you take them out, you'd party. Well, she came and she said, Kathy, there's a woman in the Midwest that's done an exercise album and nobody's heard, you know, it just came out of nowhere, but it sold a million copies, right? You know, so we went to we called in favors from friends and photographers and musicians and this and that, went in the studio and we recorded an exercise album where it's my voice with sound-alike songs like to Christopher Cross and Michael Jackson, you know, Ride Like the Wind and, you know, Beat It type things. And again, that got me on the Merv Griffin shows, the Michael Douglas shows, the Today shows, the morning shows. And it became sort of the beginning of what we call the self-help movement. I do want to mention one thing because I was interviewed by for the book The Century, which is where they recap the whole 100 years. And Peter Jennings and ABC came in to do it. They did a documentary on it. And one of the things they talked about is we went from the we generation, again, Vietnam, civil rights, all the things I mentioned, women's rights, into the me generation. Right. So now it's like, let's go, you know, let's talk about me. So that was, you know, it would, and then it launched into clothing and it was just a big deal. I mean, we used to, when I got signed for videos, my first one again was because my first video that came out called The Ultimate Workout came out right when Jane Fonda's did. Jane Fonda opened up the whole industry for me. So she's, you know, I bow down to Jane because it's because of Jane that I have a career. But they
came out in the same year of each other, I think, right? I mean, it was. And I mean, like Kathy would never say this, but I believe it was Elle Magazine that at the time was quoted as saying, "Move over, Jane Fonda." When Kathy's first video came out, but of course we do bow down to Jane. It goes without saying. Just want to go back to the first vinyl. As you said, it's your audio instruction with the music, but then there's like a poster that you put up on the wall with pictures of you demonstrating the moves. So that's the visual component. And you did two of those before you then moved to VHS.
Yeah, three actually, yes. Yeah. And then in 1982, you know, there was enough penetration of VCRs in the marketplace that we had the idea to do a video, went to Minneapolis. We actually shot part of it, I shot my first five in Minneapolis and a few of them at Prince's studio. But Minneapolis, Target was back there. They, you know, the big companies, they had KTEL, they had a lot of people that they were doing a lot of direct marketing back there. And they're the ones that believed in it. So I do have to say, when this fitness trend started, I would do interviews and they typically would start with, this is just a fad. It's going to be gone. Mm. Right. And then after the fad language left, it's like, it's a trend. Trends last about 10 years, but then we probably won't see this again. So it really took a lot of, you know, I remember my first contract, nobody knew how to even, like, to get an agent. There was no divisions at any of these companies. And they didn't. And so I actually was friends with Chris Everett, the tennis player, and her agent said he would take me on, but knew nothing. And there was nothing that he could gauge it. There was no comparison. So I remember my first contract, think I made like $10,000 and a little royalty or something. And we sold a million copies of that. And in those days, video sold for $29. So just do the math on that.
Yeah.
So we went to sign the deal for the second one. I remember him saying, and again, I don't need to get into all the numbers and stuff, but you know, it's going to be kind of like, we'll ask for 10,000 more. And mm-hmm. Because people weren't paying attention. And I go, really? It seems like, did you see how much we sold? But it was like, it was like, oh, this is going to disappear. It was kind of that. Yeah. And I do have to say, I own, even though they paid for it. So whenever I signed, I was with Warner Brothers for 7 years, Sony, I was with Lionsgate, started out with Media Home Entertainment, but nobody thought it was going to last. So nobody cared about rights, this thing that we called rights. And so because of that, you know, I owned the rights to it, and that they were, and then eventually it became super popular for all the celebrities. So Cher had a, you know, Cindy Crawford, Revlon spent $1 million on her video. We used to spend about $250,000 with each video that we would to shoot a video. And so it was fun for me. It was like, I got to step in your world. I felt like, oh my God, we have three cameras and things are zooming in and we have big productions. And it was so much fun. And we got to create everything you have to do for a movie, let's say. All that had to be done for these videos back in those days. You had to get the musicians, hire the musicians. What kind of songs do you want? What kind of staging? What kind of, you know, backdrops? And where do you want to shoot this? And we got very, you know, I remember from one of my videos, they had just shot Madonna's video. And so I liked something they did in that. So we got this guy and it turned out to be a crazy, not so good interpretation of it. But anyway, it was a fun time. I got to travel around the world, still do, but you know, Japan, England, because mm-hmm. This was whatever was happening here. It was exploding around the world. And so the 80s and the 90s and the music, the one thing that people underestimate is how music drove this. So, you know, we had the Pointer Sisters and we had Prince and we had all of these. And then as you got into the 90s and you had Devo and Whip It, and you went into all of these different musical genres. And then when hip hop became big, just how it changed the movement patterns, how it changed the look of the sets. So anyway, it was very, very exciting. And I've done like 130 videos, DVDs, you know, programs. And eventually all of this production though disappeared, obviously, with social media and the fact that we now have our iPhones and we can now do it on, you know, on Instagram. So still good, all good. And that's it. But it was really a time that people were pouring money into these videos because they were selling. I mean, they were at Blockbuster, Target, Walmart. I mean, they were up. I know sometimes on the chart, this seems crazy, but it would be Kathy Smith, Raiders of the Lost Ark or something, because you were selling. Yeah. I mean, the sales were that high.
Yeah. And you know, when I started working for you, it was early aughts. You had, I think, just turned 50 or, you know, and it was obviously a different time in terms of media, but that was still very much happening. It was a different version of it because everything had converted to DVD and streaming wasn't a thing yet, but sort of the internet was kind of starting to seep its way in. But I did get a glimpse into a piece of what you're talking about, but also just learning your history over the years was so, I'm so struck by how, yeah, now in the age of social media, there are a million sort of self-styled fitness influencers, trainers, whatever, but that there was a time when it was the fitness version of the supermodels, meaning sort of the core group, you know what I mean? And in the fitness world, it was you, Jane Fonda, Richard Simmons, Denise Austin, Jake. Yeah.
Body by Jake. Yeah.
But it was a small community and, I mean, you've been at the forefront of so many things. I mean, we could talk for another hour. I know I have to let you go, but before I do, I mentioned at the top a few of the things that you have going on today, but what's keeping you busiest, would you say, in terms of work?
Well, I wouldn't say this is what's keeping me busiest, but kind of side notes. I was on the second season of Stallone, which just aired last week. And that's the...
No way. Oh my gosh.
This is the whole thing that Jennifer and Sly were moving to Florida, and they wanted to set Frank up with somebody. So they had called, and I said I would definitely do it. So it was a kick. It was, you know, reality TV. And partially why I do things like this, as you know, Matt, it's just for the experience. I told him going in, I wouldn't say Frank Stallone is probably, we probably don't have the same politics, but I said, and so, you know, so then it was Sly, myself and Jennifer going to dinner together, and the girls, the daughters in the background putting like, you know, hearts with their hands and things like that. And it was fun. So that was I did also just shoot last week for CNN. They have a new series coming out, which is original programming, and it's based on what were moments in television that really brought the whole community, United States, because I don't know if it's world, but let's say all of the United States together. And the one they had me come on for, it's an hour long show, and there'll be different shows, but this one was focused on the Oprah segment. Did I mention this to you? Or not?
No.
Okay. So anyway, so in 1988, Oprah Winfrey pulled out a radio flyer red wagon with 67 pounds of fat. She had lost on OptiFast 67 pounds in 3 months. And the only time she ate was once in Hawaii when Stedman went golfing and she had a burger, but instead she had 5 shakes a day. She came out and she had the wagon and she tried to lift up the fat that was in the wagon in a plastic bag, couldn't do it. She said, "My God, what is this doing? I can't even lift this. How could I be carrying this around every day?" Well, she also took off. She had a coat on. She took it off and she was back in her Calvin Klein size 10 jeans. So this was the biggest most watched show of any of Oprah's show, ever. So 20 million people, and ever in her whole career, this is the most watched Oprah show. So it was the type of thing that everybody was talking about. And again, if you think back, there was no like social media. You had to find out as you're at the checkout counter and you're looking at, you know, TV guide that it's on, but everybody started talking about this. Oh my God, Oprah, she looks great. A few months later, she gained the weight back, all of it and more. And this became the journey for her of really getting vulnerable, which I love her for it, and opening up about weight loss is not like some simple calorie in, calorie out. There's so much involved. So my role in that was to set the stage for the 80s, what was going on, what were the fad diets, what was happening, and to be kind of a voice throughout the show. So that was fun. So those are kind of side things that come along all the time. So I'm just saying that's the fine. You know, my thing is, I am writing a book, but I don't even actually want to focus on that. What I really want to focus on is I'm coming up with all kinds of ways, and I'm doing it already, and there's more in the works of like, how do you stay younger longer? And when I say that, not necessarily look younger longer, that's part of it perhaps, but feel and how are you energized? And you mentioned Huberman, his cohort is, you know, Peter Attia with his book Outlive. And Peter talks about the marginal decade, and it doesn't matter when we die, it's how long can you live well? And that's the focus of where I am. And I'm doing so much with that right now. And this new product that I teased a little bit earlier is called X-Body. So when you have a chance and I look at it, it's electromagnetic stimulation that comes in these suits.
Yeah.
That you put on, you strap them on. And now as you do your workout, your 20-minute workout, the magnetic stimulation. And when I shouldn't say electric, I'm magnetic. It's, you know, it's electrical stimulation that goes right to, so, you know, your quads are hooked up, your butt's hooked up. I have to tell you, Matt, I've never had a butt workout like this in my entire life. So if you're doing a squat, but now you have this on every 10 seconds, it comes on and all of the muscles around your butt, your medius, your maximus, your minimus, everything like little apples, like together.
Because it's not shocking you, but it's creating contraction.
Exactly. So people might have experienced this. Your audience might have experienced it. If you ever went for physical therapy and you had a sore back muscle, they would put what it was called TENS or EMS, but they put some pads on your back and you could feel that little contraction happening. And that's kind of a rehab setting. But we've known through the years that when that you can get these contractions, and that's when some of them were gimmicking, some of them were work, but you had these ab belts that came out that you put them on and said you could sit and, you know, lose your, you know, abdominals fat. But some of it not true, but the new stuff, you work in conjunction, you're using conjunction with your working out. So you're doing a squat with the bicep curl, except you do it for 10 or 15 seconds. And then you stop and then you go back 10 or 15 seconds later, each time the contraction, and you go, here it comes. And when it comes, and you work with the, you know, with the trainer to figure out where your settings are. But I'm telling mm-hmm. you, this is, and it's out of South Africa. It's made its way through Europe. There's 200 franchises that have just opened up across the US. It hasn't opened up in California yet because, they have strict franchising laws, but it's opening up there in the next month or two. So that's my, so I'm always looking for these things. I'm flying to Boulder next week to get trained on it. But in general, I would say that's again, side stuff. My thing is, I'd say in the next 3 or 4 years, I am really trying to help people understand, less from the, you know, making money off of this, but we have gotten our country has gotten itself in a real pickle with the amount of diabetes, the amount of heart disease, but you know, maybe diabetes and blood sugar issues, obesity. And now we have Ozempic and things like that, that can help you lose weight. But again, there's downsides to all that. So I don't know what my platform is going to be, but I'll tell you, I'm getting more excited than ever. And there's a lot of opportunities. I'm being asked to do a lot, but I'm also treading and moving forward cautiously. Because one of the things I found, there's too many opportunities, and I can waste my time a lot on things that are take me off what I feel is really important. So I would say by the time I talk to you next, no, I'm teasing. I don't know. I don't have quite the answer for what's going to be 5 years from now, but I look forward to checking back with you and letting you know.
Oh, we look forward to it too. I mean, I can't believe I didn't even ask you about becoming a grandmother since I last saw you. Your older daughter, Kate, has given birth to a beautiful baby boy named River, who, did he just turn one?
Yeah, he turned one a week ago. And we all experience love in life. You have romantic love, you have love for your kids, you have familial love. Everybody, I know it's, and you hate it when you hear people say this, but grandmothers get together, grandparents get together. It's like, there is no love like this. We go, did we ever love our kids this much? I mean, it's partially because you can hand them back, let's say.
I also
think it's older. You're, you know, the age thing, and you just start to appreciate the beauty. It's so naive, and you also see, you know, you become protective, and you watch your children grow into being parents. Now it's magical, and this kid happens to be like a great kid. So
he's pretty spectacular. I mean, it's no surprise. I mean, Kate and Perry are both such stars, so special. I am struggling with the reality that Kate is a mom, because this is someone I used to pick up from. She was in middle school, I think, when I started working for you. And here we are.
Here we are.
We could do so many more hours. There's so much more, but we'll just have to do this again sometime. Every conversation with you is always an epic journey and so fulfilling and inspiring. So thank you so much for doing this.
Well, thank you, Matt, man.
I'm sure everyone already knows, but you can find Kathy at kathysmith.com, and you're on Instagram is it Kathy Smith Fitness?
You got it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Thank you so much for doing this. I love you, Miss Kathy.
I love you, Matt, man. Yeah, I love you so much. And I can't wait to, you know, share more things in person and wherever. But yes, you're the best. I'm very proud of you.
And that is our show. Please do give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and follow us on Instagram at homophiliapod. Homophilia is a World of Wonder production, music by Ben Wise. Our executive producer is Renee Colvert. Our associate producer is Jess Walensky, and our audio engineer is Justin Mattson. Many thanks to Michael Pressman and everyone at World of Wonder.